Warning.
Warning.
Now for a word of caution.
It's time to step into the danger zone with your host, the danger himself, Chris Danker. Chris Danker.
The boys are... Wait, no, that's not mine. Welcome one and all back into the Danger Zone, episode number 5. Still not canceled. That's pretty cool. Nobody's mad at me yet. That's pretty cool. So far, so good. I've got an awesome guest today. I had a wonderful conversation with Aubrey Edwards from AEW. We talked about so many cool things. She's an absolute badass, and that's coming up in a little bit. I'm so incredibly happy that October is here. Honestly, it's my favorite month of the year. Weather is great. I love all the Halloween shit. My birthday is in October. I'm thinking about skipping this one this year, but that's another story. I'm 26 again, by the way, for anybody that was that might have been wondering. And I will continue to be 26 for probably the next 3-4 years or so. What else is going on? Oh, I finished Squid Game this week on Netflix. I'm not going to spoil anything if anybody hasn't seen it or hasn't finished it, whatever. I fucking loved it. It's got some really good characters. It's got a lot of holy shit moments and all that type of stuff. So I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. I'm anxiously waiting for Halloween Kills to come out, the new Halloween movie. I'm a big Michael Myers mark. I know a lot of people probably don't know that, but that franchise, man, oh my God, absolutely love it. I think I'm going to do some Halloween streams this year too. I did it last year where like I dressed up as different shit during the week and I did giveaways on stream and stuff. I think I'm going to run that back this year. That was a lot of fun. So if you're around during that time, definitely come check that out. Actually, as you're listening to this, right at this very moment, as this goes up and goes live, I'm going to be kicking back on a little bit of like a miniature getaway. I was talking with my lady and we were just like, we haven't unplugged in a while, you know, and all this talk on the show that I do about mental health and how important it is, you know, taking care of yourself. And it's like, hey, asshole, maybe like take your own advice. So there's this crazy place that we rented once last year. It's on like 10 or 12 acres of property. It's just this huge pool area with a hot tub and like ponds and shit where you can go feed fish and whatnot. It's just, it's so peaceful. And we literally just go and unwind. Like we'll binge on something, sit out by the pool, sit out in the hot tub, and that's that. And just enjoy it, you know, just be there. And then we come home and hop right back into the grind. I get really good ideas, too, when I take these little getaways. So maybe I'll come up with some cool shit for the podcast. Who knows? I have been thinking a lot about these beginning portions, too, of the podcast. Because sometimes I just forget that this is not YouTube. And that I don't need to rush through the intro at fucking warp speed. Hey, today on the podcast, I'm going to talk about your mother and why you look like that. And here she is. Okay, like and subscribe, Among Us. I can just go. I don't have to worry about that shit. And you can listen at your leisure, and it's great for friggin' everybody. Because there's a lot of shit that I like that I don't get to talk about sometimes. Like, for example, I literally lost my mind when I saw that Sora was going to be added to Smash Brothers. I would have loved to have done a reaction video or something to that. But that's just, like, not really shit that works on my channel. And some people listen to this probably, too, might have no clue what I'm talking about. But that's almost the whole point of this. Like, this podcast is not only a chance to obviously share some cool wrestling stories with people sometimes and have some laughs. It's also a pretty good way to just get to know me a little better and build on that connection that probably started from YouTube. I assume the vast majority listening to this found me through YouTube or, you know, gaming or wrestling or all of it, you know. I think I'm going to wipe my Discord, by the way, too. I organized it a little bit, but I think it might be just a little too far gone. When I launched it, I was such an idiot. Like, there were no mods, there were no rooms, nobody was getting banned for nothing. It was the Wild West. And like I said, like, I cleaned it up as much as I could, but I think starting fresh on that is probably going to be the move. Like, I wanted to have that community vibe. Like, we welcome everybody in. Nobody's bringing in any weird energy. Cause, like, I get to know y'all better that way too. You know, it's not just me. I get to know people in my community. We get to know each other a little better. But if I try typing in there now, it would just be like, where's Wrestle War? Like, where's this other series you stopped doing 3.5 years ago? It's probably done, man. I probably finished it. I still need a name for y'all too. I've been creating content full time and shit for like 7 years, and I have never, ever been able to decide on a name. You have the Chugs Army, you know. You have the Hog Dippers, of which I am one. Someone suggested the Crisscrossers the other day, which, like, I didn't hate it. I thought it was kind of clever, but I don't know. Tweet me if you've got an idea. Tweet it to me. Just make it good. Don't be like, call us the Dankers. No, that's my name. That doesn't make sense. What did somebody else say the other day too? I think like the Oppers. Something like the Ops or the Oppers. I don't know, man. Just help me out over here. I think that's one thing that I almost said regret. Because I can absolutely still do it. But like I suck at scheduling my time. So that I can put more effort into streaming. Like, just streaming in itself and building that community more. Because I love streaming. Like, when me and chat are going back and forth and everybody's having a good time and we're just playing some shit or just hanging out and some of my friends are there, whatever. That's such a cool feeling. And I mean, it sucks that Twitch sucks ass too, honestly. Like, their whole shit just got hacked this week. Everybody's earnings were made public. I looked at it too, by the way. I'll be honest. I was curious. I was like, hey, like, how much does the top Twitch streamer make? You know, and I regret looking at it. I 100% regret looking at it. Seeing like 9 million at the top of me, like, oh, okay. Okay, cool. But no, I just got to get better at scheduling my time, because I have a lot of ideas and a lot of things I'd love to do on Twitch. So it's just about, you know, getting to it and doing it and executing on all the friggin' things that I'm trying to do. But like I said, a lot of cool stuff going down just this month in October. I'm really hype about the next couple episodes we got coming out. I've got a lot of great guests penciled in. Probably more like penned in. You know, that shit's on there pretty good. I still also have a pretty decently sized list of people that I haven't even asked to come on yet. There are people, maybe far-fetched guests I'd like to have on. I don't know if far-fetched is the best word, but people that I don't have direct contact with in any way, shape, or form. But my priority right now is, you know, my friends. My priority for the show is talking to people that I know, talking to people that I respect. And to segue into it, today's guest is exactly that. I had a chance to meet her and work with her a few months ago. She's incredibly passionate and incredibly good at what she does, which is a lot. We talk about a lot of really great behind-the-scenes stuff that I think you guys are really, really going to dig. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for AEW's Aubrey Edwards to step into the danger zone. My guest today is let me see if I get this right, game developer, project manager, project coordinator, AEW referee, and I'd say just general all-around badass. Now,
you forgot podcast host.
Oh, podcast host. That's it. That's awesome. We have that in common now. But she's also one of my favorite people in the world, Miss Aubrey Edwards. Welcome to the Danger Zone.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
Thank you for being here. I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm pretending like I didn't just talk to you for 30 minutes before
this. No, we saw how you just picked up the phone.
We just started talking
right now. I don't understand what you mean. I had a very short list of people, like maybe 5 to 6 people that I wanted to have on this show when I started, before I started, because I had to, you know, prep a little bit. And you were on that list. So I very much appreciate you taking the time. And I know you roasted me a little bit for not asking you right away.
So it was funny, and this is like our conversation that we had, and I'll share. But I saw you announce the podcast, and my first thought was, I'm going to get a text message to be asked to be on this podcast. And then you texted me probably within about 20 minutes of me actually like saying this to myself.
Yeah.
And said, hey, I hate to be that guy who just started a podcast, but I'm now texting my friends and asking them to be on my podcast. And I pretended I got mad at you for not asking me sooner, but really I was just talking a big game.
Right. So I legitimately like am terrified to text people that I've known for so long because it's the one question that nobody likes getting asked. You probably get you get asked it more than anything. Any other question probably is a I started a podcast. You want to be on my podcast?
There are a lot of wrestling podcasts.
There are a lot of wrestling podcasts, and I would imagine that you get a lot of invites. So that's why I was a little slow to start reaching out to each individual person. I was like, I'm gonna take this easy one at a time. But
no, we're bros. I had to be here,
and I appreciate that. A little background on us. So we met for the first time in Miami for the Elite GM tournament. Was it Miami or was it?
Yes, it was Miami.
Okay. I just make sure I got the city right. So it was wrestlers versus content creators. You organized the entire thing from the jump.
Yes.
Tell me kind of a little bit how that whole thing came together, because there were a shit ton of moving parts to that.
I don't think I've ever worked on a project that had that many moving gears all at the same time. And like for those that don't make video games, the last like month of making a video game is probably the most chaotic, because you're trying to get it done. And that's, of course, when karma is going to rear its ugly head and everything's going to start breaking. So this will play into this story soon.
Sure.
So the idea kind of came to be, we were talking about it with the AEW Games marketing team, which is how I actually ended up meeting you. Is the guy that runs a lot of our marketing, his name is Shane, and you two are buddies. And we're talking about who we want to have in the tournament. We're talking about how we want the format to go and such. And we originally had like some ideas for like who's going to do commentary. And then we had, you know, the part of the problem with doing it during a show is that we're not actually sure who's going to be booked. So we have like an idea of what talent we want. And then, oh, that talent's not going to be there. Now we suddenly have to find like a backup.
Sure.
Kind of all these things, which is funny because I don't think Orange Cassidy was on the initial list. And then he ended up making it to the finals, which is hilarious. So it was discussed very early on that we wanted you to do commentary because one, you have a great voice for commentary. And two, you've already done incredible videos where you're doing commentary for wrestling games. So for me, it was like, duh, this is a no-brainer. And then Shane was like, well, you should do commentary too. And I'm like, no, I don't. I should not. But like, it makes sense. Like, I get it.
No, I'm glad he had that idea, because I think it came out really well in the end.
I think it did come out really well. I think you and I have a really good dynamic, and I think we fed off of each other well.
Yeah.
It was great because all of the commentary had to be recorded after the fact when everything was edited.
I don't think people know that.
In the same, So all of the little interview things we did in person together, which is great because that ended up building our relationship. And I think that helped the commentary be better because we already had that connection when we started doing everything after the fact, once it was edited.
Yeah.
But man, that tournament was like, they put us in the wrong room. So we had to move everything the next day because that was supposed to be like the production office and Dynamite's kind of important. So they needed their space.
A little bit. I think I heard of that.
And all these cameras. it's a little product we do.
Just a little something.
You know, number one show on cable. No big deal.
Just a little something.
But like, so that was the priority. We had to schedule like a certain number of guys for Tuesday night and then a certain number of guys for Wednesday morning. And then on top of that, because it's a mobile game, it's not streaming well. And we're down to like the games run in portrait mode. So it's not going to show well on streams or YouTube or at all. So we ended up, because the game's built in Unreal, we built what we called spectator mode, which was essentially an exported version of the game that runs in a screen-friendly format.
Yeah.
And the game was multiplayer, so we end up hooking up all of the friend codes so we can record on a separate machine while people are playing the game.
Right.
And because it's the last month of development, I think we're literally like, we were a week away from submitting.
Yeah.
And we were trying to like finalize the trailer editing. Like there was so much other stuff going on and I was a bag of stress and I'm sorry to everybody who interacted with me during that like 3-day period. But yeah, so it's like we would end up having issues where like footage just outright wouldn't record.
Yeah.
Or it would crash on the third round and we'd have to redo everything. Or someone's phone just wouldn't connect, so we'd end up having to like give them someone else's profile. Yeah. Or they had installed the game and not played it, so the guy doing all of the recording would sit there and like play through the tutorial again because there was just so much shit.
There was.
And we got it all working, and then we had like the whole content creator side where we're recording this off-site. And I think the finals, Orange Cassidy was actually in a storm at the time.
Mm.
So he kept losing connection.
Oh no.
While we're trying to film like him and Pulse
at
the same time recording. But ultimately like it came out well.
Mm-hmm.
There was, there were a couple bugs that ended up rearing their ugly head. Like the TNT logo didn't look good in a lot of the footage, which sucked because the TNT logo has to look good because they're a broadcast partner.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of creative editing we had to do like down to the wire, which I think, and this is all like exclusive stuff that's never been talked about before, but it ended up pushing our release timeline for these videos out like 2-3 days because it ended up just taking a lot of time. Like we'd have to read all these things. All these videos are like 10, 15 minutes tops.
Yeah.
So you're editing a bunch of stuff. You have to re-export it, check it, find a couple other things. Like it was just an absolute nightmare. And the product that we ended up getting out of it, all these videos and this tournament and with Pulse winning, and he ended up winning a title belt.
Yeah.
We ended up flying him
to
Dallas.
Which looks sweet, by the way. That belt looks sweet.
Thank you.
That's so cool looking.
I'm a big mark for white straps.
Yeah.
And I wanted something that was a very classic look, so that was sort of my like, and I wanted it to be like a trophy, right?
Yeah.
Like this is a one of a kind thing that is only going to exist in this moment, and I wanted it to give this tournament like a reputation of like, no, this is a legit thing. Mm-hmm. So one of the guys who makes our belts was the guy that made the belt. We just basically told him an idea, here's what I want, blah, blah, blah. And he made it, and it's Belts by Dan. He was actually
absolutely
incredible guy.
I follow him actually. Yeah, he does some crazy stuff.
Great work.
Crazy stuff.
Great work. But yeah, so Pulse wins. We fly him out to Dallas. We get him front row tickets. He ends up working with Tony to book Luther, who is like his favorite wrestler.
That's his boy. Yeah.
In a match.
That's his boy.
With Lee Johnson. He gets a spot in the middle of the match. Like it turned out way better than anything
that's so
that
awesome.
I think we originally pitched.
Yeah.
Like it's still very different because wrestling is always like card subject to change. Who knows who's going to be there? There's storylines currently going, so there's like some people are off limits.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to let him book, you know, Kenny Omega versus.
I know some people were like, "Oh, come on, man, why didn't you book Kenny versus, you know, like someone he's never fought before?" Come on,
yeah, we're gonna have like. I love Pulse, right? But we're not going to have him come in and suddenly start like
booking pay-per-view free reign of anybody he could have had in that match. I can't even begin. It would have been like a six.
I know
person.
Exactly what it would have been.
It would have been
Colton Gunn versus Luther. That's what it would have been.
It would have been the intergender match too. There have been like so many elements.
Oh my God.
It
would have been so many other things. It's like, oh guys, we can't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
It would have been insane.
But it was great because the thing that I didn't know was that like I'm pitching this thing to Lee Johnson and Luther and they're saying, okay, cool. So they just assume this like 12-year-old kid is coming in and booking this match. And then Pulse walks in and Lee Johnson goes, wait, Pulse is here? Pulse is like, what are you talking about? He goes, dude, I watch your videos.
That's
and they're
awesome.
Like all fans of each other.
Yeah.
So it was this magical moment of like, oh my God, the world is so small. This
it really
is. So well.
It really
they
is.
They gave Pulse like a spot in the match where he like ends up like wiping his sweaty hand on Lee Johnson. Like it was just, they gave him a lower third. It was like, it was so great.
I was so
and
happy for him.
I absolutely loved it. Like it turned out better than I think anyone expected. And it was great for like the promotion of our game, which is kind of the whole reason why we did it in
absolutely.
The first place.
Absolutely. I know Pulse like, oh, when he got the title, when he did the whole thing, like he was freaking out. He was so happy. He said, like seeing him, he works really hard. He busts his ass, you know, in the wrestling community and stuff. And I think he sometimes doesn't get the recognition he deserves
Yeah.
And he, you know, he's been a really good friend of mine for a long time. So seeing him in that spot made me very, very happy. It's also really cool seeing how, like, especially from my perspective, because, you know, I've been involved with a bunch of different stuff over the years. It's cool to see how the AEW Games crew reached out to creators or influencers, whatever
influencers,
you want to call them.
Like,
to get them, to get them involved, you know what I mean? Like, from your perspective, from more of like, from more of a dev perspective, right? How important are those relationships to have?
It's twofold. It's, we look at it from the game development side, but I'm also going to talk about it from like the AEW side.
Sure.
As a game developer, to not recognize that content creators are critical to the marketing process of your game is silly.
Yeah.
Because Twitch is so huge. And Twitch is, I think, the first thing where I realized how old I was, because the first time I heard about it, I'm like, why would people want to sit and watch games? That just seems so silly.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm old now officially. But I get it. I understand it. Like, I know why people don't. And I think like three times as many people watch people play games than actually play games, which is insane. Like, it's its own form of media now.
Yeah.
It's easily a thing. So for you to ignore it is doing a disservice to your product.
Absolutely.
So in my mind, if you've got people with established fan bases who enjoy wrestling games, who want to talk about your game, it's your responsibility as a game developer to help them facilitate it, because a lot of times there's not any money exchanged in this scenario. It's just a matter of like, I scratch your back, you scratch my back type thing.
Right.
And it's like, hey, I want to help you guys out. Here's this thing, you know, let me know if you have any questions. Cause like another thing that people don't know, like, we had a closed alpha initially for Elite General Manager before we had the public beta, and a lot of the people involved in the tournament we had invited to the alpha.
Yeah.
And part of that was because you guys are the ones playing wrestling games.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, arguably, your feedback is very, very important.
Mm.
So for the sake of making a good product as a game developer, that's the kind of feedback I want. Like, obviously, all feedback is good. Like, people are going to like the game. People are not going to like the game.
Of course.
But for people who are aware just innately of the competitive products on the market and what streams well and what doesn't and, you know, what fans want and what fans don't want, like, that value, that feedback is just so, so valuable. So that's how I met you. That's how I met a bunch of the other guys in the tournament, was just like incorporating all of you guys and your opinions into our game that we were developing. Because at the same time, like, it's a free-to-play game. Like, we know that there's a lot of opinions about free-to-play games and whatnot, but ultimately we wanted to make a fun game. And having people who get a lot of enjoyment out of playing wrestling games telling you, is this fun or not, is kind of a big deal.
Absolutely.
The second side of it is from the AEW side of it. And this is something that I told a lot of the content creators early on, was that AEW is built from the ground up by fans. Like, you look early on, you have BTE, you have the press conference, you see, and even to this day, like, Bryan Danielson coming out and saying part of the reason you joined AEW was the fans.
Yeah.
Right. And that has always been core to who we are, is AEW is for the fans because the fans wanted an alternative.
Right.
So as part of what we're building with AEW games, we want it to feel like a brand of AEW, because that's what it is. It falls under the AEW media umbrella. So for us to not support the gamers and have that community be a part of it, then we're just not doing, we're not fulfilling our mission.
Right.
So from two perspectives, I mean, it's a big business decision, but it's also just like who I am as a person. Like, I really like all the things that AEW stands for and all the things that we do. So it makes my job a lot easier when I just do the things that I like.
Right. Absolutely. And I think, like, understanding that the bridge and the road go both ways too is important. You know what I mean? Because, like you said, a lot of times there's not monetary transactions happening. It's sometimes, hey, I'm going to do this for you. And, you know, hey, maybe you'll retweet it. Maybe somebody will, you know, you know, get some exposure to it, whatever it is. On the topic of games, the AEW console game has got to be probably one of the most highly anticipated wrestling games of maybe all time. Maybe all time.
Yes. Maybe all time. That's a strong statement, but yeah.
I know it is, but it might, we're talking 8-figure budget. I think I remember reading something like that.
Probably
unfairly high expectations for it.
100%.
But how I would love to know, how involved are you behind the scenes with the console game, and what's like the internal expectations for it? Because we know what the fan expectations for it, but what are more of the internal expectations for it?
This is going to blow your mind. I'm not working on the console game at all.
At all?
At all. I am 100% focused on Elite General Manager. Mm. I have been. All of the things that you have seen of the console game are the same things that I have seen of the console game.
Interesting.
So if it's public footage, that's what I've seen. It's very, very close to the chest right now. I know Kenny is like, and I think part of that is the expectations are so high, is that Kenny is very, very focused on this. Like when he's not wrestling, he's working on this thing. It's insane. And I will be working on it eventually.
Right.
That's a given, but with Elite General Manager shipping this year and then us trying to get out our season passes and all these things, there's a ton of things for me to be focused on right now with that project. Absolutely. And I don't want to be like, peace guys, and then go over to the, like the cool hotness and like ditch my buddies over here, because it's still a project that is important to us and
of course
needs to continue to generate revenue for the company. So I totally agree with you that anticipation is very high for me in particular, because I really, really want to work on it. Console games are like my bread and butter. I've shipped six of them.
I mean, everything we've seen so far between, you know, some of the gameplay aspects and just these little teases and stuff, I get that feeling in my stomach. I get that little butterfly feeling of, hey, it looks like that, you know, that old classic good feeling wrestling game.
Classic feeling wrestling game that we all know.
That we all know and love. Knowing that Kenny is like super focused on it too is really cool, because of how involved he is with games and how much and big of a gamer he is. I think that that's one thing that I got to give you guys credit for too, is that you kind of get, like, we have people on our roster that are very good at things outside of the ring also. So let's highlight that. Let's let them, you know, kind of explore those avenues and do all those cool things. And I think that's really one of the coolest things that I've seen about you guys. Is that something you've noticed too? You kind of get spotlight where you deserve it, for lack of a better term?
I think it's, I mean, I like it. I like, I built a whole career doing this. Yeah. I have a 4-year undergrad in computer science. I worked in video games full time for 11 years. I've shipped 6 games. It's not necessarily something I wanted to leave behind, but I was like, maybe I'll come back to this eventually. And then turns out, like 6 months into AEW, they're like, hey, we want you to run this project.
Yeah.
So it works out, right? But like AEW hired me, they had no idea what my background was. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of like taking advantage of an opportunity that comes across, right?
Right.
And I think my favorite example of this is Evil Uno, who's currently heading up our Twitch division and getting the channel up and running, getting the content generated, like organizing all of that, doing like the actual recording, editing, like all of that. And it makes sense because he's a gamer and he has a successful Twitch channel.
Yeah.
And we saw him continually doing this, like helping out when they were doing the like the Sus Day Sundays during the pandemic, when they were all coming together. It's like, Uno's already doing this job.
Yeah.
Like, why are we not just using him to do this? And it's great because you have people who have existing connections. You have people that you know work well together. Like, I'm in meetings now with Evil Uno weekly. And it's like, obviously, we work well together in the ring. So why wouldn't we work together well in the office?
Absolutely.
So it's so nice that it's like, oh, you're good at this thing? Cool. We're going to have you do this thing.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah, I think
and then you breed a lot of passion because you have people working on things that they legitimately like.
Absolutely. 100%. I agree. And I like that. Like I said, I like that so much about the company that it seems like it's got a family type of oriented vibe to it also as well. I can see you talk about games all day, but among the many hats you wear, of course, is that of a full-time All Elite Wrestling referee.
Yes.
Dynamite just celebrated its 2-year anniversary.
Yes.
What have been some of the moments that have kind of meant the most to you over these last couple of years?
Jeez. I mean, it's insane. Like, every time I get in an Uber and people are like, oh, what do you do for work? You kind of like drill down to like a description. It's almost like an elevator pitch. So I tell people, I yell at dudes who play fight in their underwear on TV and it pays my bills. Like, oh, because ultimately that's what I do. It's an absolutely ridiculous job.
Sure.
But like, it's so cool that I have a company flying me around the country to yell at dudes who play fight in their underwear on TV. and I get put in hotels and I get to see all these cool places and all these amazing things. So like overall, just the absurdity of what my life is, that like this is just normal for me, right? Yeah. Like that's cool in and of itself. But the individual like moments that were just like, oh my God, this is amazing. To have someone like Chris Jericho want you to be his referee for the first ever title match is like insane.
That's
like
huge.
It's still to this day, I'm just like, okay, whose leg was he pulling? Like I almost still don't believe that it happened. But it's weird that like Chris and I are just friends.
Yeah.
Like we were coworkers, but at the same time, like I watched him on TV, but now to me, he's just like a normal dude.
Yeah.
Getting to work with CM Punk in front of a crowd of over 20,000 people in New York when CM Punk was the guy is the reason I watch wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
There's all of these moments of just like, I had the last pay-per-view All Out. I did the Chris Jericho versus MJF match where if Chris Jericho lost, he wasn't going to wrestle again.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put myself over a little bit. I was very happy with my work in that match.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when I'm in the middle of reffing, I hate it because I'm so worried about this needs to happen and then this needs to happen and this needs to happen. I need to focus on this and I make sure the timing's here. Like, hate's a strong word, but like there's just so much going on that I don't get to enjoy it to its fullest extent. But in that match, it went so well and the crowd was so into it that I went to the back and I'm just like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. Because I was just so like feeling that emotion of like, this was a really cool thing. And that's how I felt. So I can't imagine how people watching it felt.
Yeah.
The same with like Sammy Guevara versus Sean Spears in Houston at Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Like Sammy had proposed to his girlfriend earlier in the day. Sean Spears is one of my favorite people to work with because he has a great understanding of psychology and how to properly use a ref to get heat and all these things.
Sure.
And Sammy and I are good buds. So it's like all of these, like it's already a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy's in his hometown. He's going over and the match itself is good. And I'm just like outright enjoying it in the moment. Like, man, this is great. This is awesome. As I'm watching them like do stupid Spanish flies off the top. Like, this is awesome.
That's
oh, like- crap. Are they okay? Yes. Okay. It's fine. But like, that's to say like, there's so many moments that we could like write down and say like, this was a historic moment. This was a moment. This is a moment from like the company. But like, for me personally, there's so many like individual little things that I've felt and emotions that I've gotten to experience and friendships I've gained.
Yeah.
That are just, it's absolutely unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. Referees too are in such an interesting position because you are an on-screen character just as much as the wrestlers in the ring, but also you're expected not to draw, you know, that type of attention at the same time or whatever the expectations
are. It's a delicate balance.
Right.
It's a delicate balance.
Personally, I prefer that the referees have faces and personalities. I like to know who the referees are. I think in certain situations it can add. It doesn't take anything away. It adds to what's going on. Not everybody agrees, of course. So how do you gauge what the right amount of referee involvement is? Like, how do you know what that line is?
Obviously I agree with you because I like being a named character on TV, but that's my cup of tea, right?
Like
wrestling is a buffet. Some people like steak, some people like chicken, some people just straight up hit up the dessert bar. Like you do what you want, you get what you like. And
of course
that's totally fine. But the thing that I find, and I take all of my direction from the wrestlers because it's not my story.
Right.
I'm telling it's theirs. So there are things that I will do or things that I will react, but it's always, or it at least always attempts to be in service to what the boys are trying to get over. And I say boys, meaning like everyone in the back, the wrestlers on the roster. It's a gendered term, but like, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's a matter of if I know that there's a particular way that something could go, like I could respond in either A or B.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask the wrestler like, hey, so in this spot, do you want me to do this or do you want me to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they don't have a preference. Sometimes they say, just do whatever feels right. Sometimes they have a very specific of like, I don't want this moment to be oversold, but I want the next one to be the thing that's the focus.
Sure.
Or someone will say, like, this is the big falsie, like, really sell this one. I'm like, yeah. Okay, cool. And a lot of times it's just a matter of, like, do whatever you would do. And
yeah.
a lot of that comes with the trust of working with certain wrestlers over and over and over again.
Of course.
Because there's some guys, like, they'll just tell me, like, okay, here's the couple of beats, here's the finish, good. And they just want me to do my thing.
Mm.
But there's some times where it's, like, maybe, like, a huge blow-off match, or just certain people in particular, like, they want things told a certain way and pacing to be correct a certain way. And it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But that's just a matter of working with people. I don't think that's, like, unique to wrestling.
Sure.
I think that's any sort of working environment. You have coworkers and everyone communicates a certain way. And ultimately I'm doing the same things I did as a project manager in games, which is the other people are making the games. I'm just facilitating that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving them the resources they need and the information they need in order to make something awesome.
Right.
And I'm literally doing the exact same thing. They're just in underwear and I'm wearing stripes.
That's a great way to look at it. Do you remember the first time that, like, you realized, oh shit, I actually have fans myself. Like, there's little girls dressing as referees. I'm sure there's going to be, like, a ton of little ref Aubreys on Halloween this year. Like, when did when did it start to become apparent to you that that was a thing?
I think it was honestly, like, the first Dynamite ever.
Mm.
Cause that was the first show after All Out, which was Chris and Hangman for the title.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, like, I thank Jericho from the bottom of my heart. Like, that match made me, because he gave me the moment where I got to get in his face and yell at him and show authority.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it puts over my position as a referee. It also shows that just cause I'm a woman, he's not going to, like, back down. Like, there's a respect aspect there.
Mm-hmm.
So not only was that important to me as a person, but it was important to my role as a referee. So now all of a sudden I'm established, because you have someone like Jim Ross saying my name on TV,
yep.
which is insane. So if, like, now I'll go to shows and I'll come out during commercial to get set up and whatnot before entrances, and people are, like, chanting my name.
Mm.
And it feels real good. I worry a little too much, because, like, I never want people... Like, once the match starts, I want the focus to be on the boys.
Sure. Yeah.
That's the idea. So it's like, yeah, cool. I like it. Hi. Thanks. shut up now. Bye. that's generally what I always tell people. It's like, yeah, it's fun. Okay. Now save your energy for, like, the match.
Yeah.
Like, all that kind of stuff. But I think it was that first Dynamite. Like, that's when I started to notice that, like, people knew who I was.
Right.
Who I was. Because they had responded to that moment I had with Chris at the pay-per-view.
Mm.
And since then, I've gotten... those other moments that have helped. And,
right.
you know, with the announcer team being able to say our names on TV, people can connect with us.
Yeah.
As you said before, like, all the referees have personalities. Like, I respond to something differently. The way that Bryce would respond to something is different than Paul, different than Knox. And we all have different movements. We have different reactions. We have different facial expressions. There's so many nuances to all of us that, even though we're all referees, we're all extremely different.
Right.
And the fact that we're allowed to be those people, it just means that people can connect with you. Mm-hmm. Right.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. The joy that you get out of it too is, like, is so obvious, and the passion that you have for it is,
oh, I love it.
Like, comes through with every time you mention anything about your job. It's so you can obviously see how much you love it. You posted a really cool picture recently too of, it was you raising Punk's arm after one of his recent matches. And like you had just mentioned mentioned earlier that Punk, like, got you into wrestling. What was your reaction when you found out that you were going to be reffing a Punk match? And where did that night kind of rank amongst your all-time moments?
I found out I was going to be reffing that match. I think we were in Cincinnati. I think that was the show after All Out.
Mm-hmm.
Punk told me, he's like, hey, I want you to ref my next match. I'm like, oh.
That's awesome.
He goes, yeah. And he, like, fist bumps, walks away. So I don't know what his next match is. I'm just like, cool, okay. So I mentioned it to Paul, because Paul's our senior ref. He does all the assignments. I'm like, hey, Punk had mentioned to me that he wants me to ref his next match. He goes, okay, cool. And then come to find out, it's going to be his match against Will Hobbs and Rampage in Queens in the biggest show we've ever done. And I'm like, okay, cool. Awesome. Thankfully, I had had two matches before that. So I'd, like, gotten... like the kinks and the nervousness out, which is silly because I literally did the match right before, which was the women's title match on Dynamite. And that was like nerve wracking.
Yeah.
Main events are always hard because you have to be off the air by a certain amount of time. So like timing is really, really critical.
Sure.
So there's that. I literally run to the back, chug a bottle of water, go back out for Rampage. Like it was just insane. But I'm standing in the ring, Hobbs does his entrance, and then like the little right before Cult of Personality starts playing. And I just look at Hobbs and he's just like, for those not watching the video version on Patreon, I just mimicked swearing.
Yes.
I'm not going to say it. I don't know what your rules are, but whatever.
Oh, you are more than welcome to say whatever you want. You are more. Oh,
he literally just goes, fuck. Because I think like both of us are just like, ugh. And then I'm standing there and my arms go numb. I'm like, I kind of need those.
Oh my God.
Hopefully that comes back.
Aubrey Count, I can't.
I'm just swinging my body. and nothing works.
Oh my God.
But ultimately, like it was an easy match. Like I've watched this stuff so much that it's like, okay, I know what he's gonna do. I know how it's gonna work. I know all these spots. Blah, blah, blah. I get to the back, and funny enough, Jericho is standing there. He goes, "Hey, how was it?" I'm like, "I have not been that nervous since the first time I worked with you."
Wow. That's which is awesome.
Total shoot.
Yeah.
Like, I had literally not been that nervous since the title match.
That's like a full circle moment. That's awesome. That's so freaking cool.
Yeah, it was just funny that it's like he happened to be there.
Yeah.
Those, which is like, funny because the next match I worked was his. So
that's awesome. Like, you just, these little stories that all connect together are so great. Like, you've had such a great run in a company that has not even been around for that long.
I
can only imagine, you know, what's going to happen as time goes on. And with you being, you know, such a recognizable face and doing it in such a positive way, I think it's great. It's great for the company. It's great for wrestling. It's great for people that want to get into wrestling, people that are aspiring to be part of it. It all comes together quite well, I would say, in the package that you guys have put together. And I know that you get extra criticism for being a female referee, you know?
Just off
the rip, you're already open to a higher degree of criticism, of course.
I think so.
You come off as the type of person, though, that shit kind of just doesn't really bother you.
I don't give a fuck.
Has it? I'm like getting ready to ask this question. How you feel? Oh, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a shit. Has it ever gotten to be too much? Were there ever times where shit just something couldn't roll off your back, or it was got to be a little much?
I think I'm very good about having things just kind of roll away because I didn't start reffing till I was 30. So I'm already an adult who's, and 20s are very transformative.
Absolutely.
You learn a lot about yourself as a person, graduated college, you became an adult with bills. I got married. Like, there's all these things that happen in your 20s.
Yep.
So the fact that I have all of that life experience already.
Yeah.
Kind of under my belt. The amount of fucks I have to give is already much smaller.
Sure.
And I'm very much I'm a very logical minded person that if I can't control something or change it, like, why am I bothering? So if someone's opinion is that my lipstick is too distracting, which is like one of the complaints I got very early on, which I find hilarious still to this day. It's like, okay, dude, if you're paying attention to my lipstick, you're not paying attention to the wrestling at all. So
here's everybody in tights and bright colors and sparkly, but your lipstick comes too distracting.
But my lipstick is really
way
distracting
too distracting, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Way. And I'm like, oh, cool. So I could probably put like gemstones on my shirt somehow, and that's not going to be distracting because they're already focused on this already.
No, anyway, one would even know.
But the things like that, it's like a comment like that, like I just have to laugh at it because it's just funny.
Yeah.
Like, I can't change that opinion because they have it. Mm-hmm. Like, the only thing I can do is continue to do the best I can at my job.
Yeah.
And to draw less attention to the fact that I'm a woman. And I think now I would say, and I don't know if people would agree with this, but I feel that there's very little thought put into the fact that, like, oh, this ref is a girl. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, no, this is just Aubrey.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the person that I am. Like, our refs are all on sort of equal footing.
Right.
As far as, like, there's no, like, oh, it's the girl, she's more delicate. It's like, if anything, I'm more badass. Like, I like to think that that's the character that I've built.
Yeah.
That, like, I don't take any crap from anybody, all that sort of stuff. So, it's kind of one of those, I'd be lying to say that, like, it doesn't affect me. You could have, like, 1,000 responses to a tweet that says, oh, you're awesome. And then one of them says, like, fat and ugly. And then it's like,
oh, is that so, Rick 775986425776?
Got the little egg profile picture because you know it's a burner account. Like, yeah, it's like those are the ones that are like, they affect you. And then it's a matter of just being able to stop, recognize what you're feeling because your feelings are valid, and then moving on.
Yeah.
And I've just gotten very good at the moving on. I also, like, straight up, and this is like a stance that I've taken only recently, because I used to just mute people on Twitter because I didn't like people finding joy in being blocked. Because there's always those people like, oh, this celebrity blocked me, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, the problem is that if someone isn't blocked, other people can respond to it.
Yeah.
And that just continues to build negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that. I want responses to my stuff to be positive.
Yeah.
Like, criticism's fine, but I want the general, I don't want negativity.
Yeah.
So if someone's being negative, I'm now quick to block them.
Good.
Because I don't want anyone who's coming to my timeline to see stuff.
Yeah.
To see that kind of thing. Because why would I want to encourage that?
I think that's a stance more people should take. It's just cleanse your timeline of the bullshit that you don't want to see. And that's the end of it. And it's like, it can really help kind of alleviate some of the stress, especially if you're like someone who is in a public eye or you're on TV like yourself, or you make content. People always have their criticisms, and they're gonna sometimes say them in ways that, hey, you probably could have said that a little better. So sometimes you gotta deal with it and let them move on.
And wrestling too is also like, people have a lot of opinions of wrestling, but unless you're in the discussion about the match, you don't fully understand all of the things that are being talked about, right?
Of course.
And ultimately, if the wrestlers I work with are happy and my bosses are happy, and I got a contract extension this year, so clearly I'm doing something good.
Awesome.
Like you. Let me just drop that in there.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But yeah, it's like, if those are the people that ultimately determine like my future, right? And if they're happy, then that's all that matters.
Absolutely.
Like, making other people on Twitter happy, like, that's just bonus.
Yeah, I agree. I do like to touch on, in these episodes with my guests, the topic of mental health a little bit. To the extent of, whatever they're comfortable of talking about, of course.
Absolutely, it's important.
Between the business you're in, the toll that it can take, the expectations, the projects that you pile on yourself personally, balancing all those things, and at the same time your own personal life. What are some of those issues or struggles that you've had that you've had to overcome? And again, only what you're comfortable talking about.
Yeah, no, I very openly talk about mental health. I was diagnosed bipolar about 10 years ago, and I've been on meds ever since, and they're very good. They help me a lot.
Yeah,
I know people react to medications differently, and there's a ton of different meds out there. And it's finding medication that works for you is a challenge, because sometimes you try something and it doesn't work. And sometimes you try something, but it's the wrong dosage. And then sometimes you have to add something else to solve a specific problem, but now it needs to change elsewhere. Like, it was basically like a year of just finding the cocktail that that worked for me.
Yeah.
And I found it, and it's great. And I take meds twice a day. As I'm supposed to. And I take it very, very seriously, because I've seen the downsides of what happens if you don't take care of it. Like, my dad committed suicide when I was a kid because he was bipolar.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I know firsthand what happens if you don't treat mental illness seriously. Which is why, like, I take my meds twice a day.
Yeah.
And I try and take care of myself, because it's a very painful situation to live through, and I wouldn't want someone else to have to deal with that, I'd say the biggest thing that I struggle with mental health wise is the things you're supposed to do that your doctor tells you is, you need to get enough sleep every night, and you need to eat well, and you need to exercise. It's all the things you need to do even beyond mental health. It's just taking care of yourself as a human being, right?
Yeah.
And we're on the road a lot. We're in random cities.
Yeah.
The working out thing, I don't have a problem with that, because I think, like, that's just built into the job. Like, you have to stay in shape in order to do what you do. My thing I found, and this is just from my own personal field study, is that if I go 3 days without working out, I will immediately crash into a depression.
Mm.
So even if it's a matter of like, I just need to do 10 minutes of yoga.
Yeah.
Like that will be enough to curb that from happening.
Mm.
And that's just what I found that works for me. Your mileage may vary type thing.
Right. Of course.
But I would say the biggest struggle I'm having right now is getting enough sleep because as someone who lives on the West Coast, and we often do shows on the East Coast, I'm taking the first flight out on Tuesdays, which means by Monday nights, I'm getting like 3 or 4 hours of sleep because I don't go to bed early enough because I forgot to pack and I was busy and blah, blah, blah. Like excuses, right? Like I know better, but I don't. And then I only see my friends one day a week because that's when we work. So of course I'm going to want to hang out with them after the show. And like this week in particular, I'll be fully honest, I didn't go to bed till like 4 a.m. Wednesday night because I was hanging out with buddies.
Jeez. Yeah.
And it's like, that's really good stuff that's like good for the soul, is hanging out with your support system and your friends and people that you care about.
Yeah.
And those are like the decisions that you have to make in the moment of like, do I go to bed right now or do I hang out? And I made the decision in that moment that I will be sleeping on my flight tomorrow. So that is what I did. But yeah, and then just trying to eat well. Like I stopped drinking almost 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking and drugs and antidepressants tend to not play well together.
Yep.
And I had kind of just decided that I'm going to see what happens if I give it up for a year. And I did, and I didn't miss it. So now I just don't drink.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's a challenge. It's something you have to, it's not something at the forefront of my mind every day, but it is something that affects me every day.
Yeah.
I made a Twitter post today, about 2 hours before we had this conversation, I had therapy and, I definitely made myself some street tacos after that. Cause it was like, today was good.
was that new for you? Is this your first,
no, I've been to therapy on and off. I see therapy a lot, like taking your car to the shop. Cars need regular oil changes, and therapy is just an oil change for your brain.
Like, that's a great way to look at it. That's a really good way to look at it.
Yeah, I think it's a normal thing.
Yeah, I think too many people look at it like, oh no, that just, if I got to talk to a therapist, it means I'm crazy or it means like something wrong with me.
And it's not at all.
It's not the case.
I think the hardest thing with therapy is it's really hard to sit in a room and be vulnerable with a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to have a relationship with someone the first time you meet them.
Yeah.
So like my most recent therapist that I started seeing, like, I didn't like him after one session. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to gel with this dude.
Yeah.
And then after 3 sessions, I'm like, oh, he's great. Like, we totally mix. It also helps that he watches wrestling. So when I refer to people in my sessions, he knows who I'm talking about.
That's awesome.
He's like, oh, you mean Cody? Like Cody Rhodes? Like, yes, yes.
That's that sick.
Cody. Oh, hey, how's work? Oh, we hired Mark Henry. The world's strongest man? Yes. So side benefit, finding a therapist that's into the same stuff you are is actually pretty convenient. But like I stopped seeing him for a little bit because I see it as therapy is giving you tools for your toolbox.
Yeah.
Because when you need it most, they're not necessarily going to be standing there right next to you telling you, hey, here's how you need to deal with the situation. But they're there to give you the tools so that you can deal with it yourself.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. But yeah, I had another one today because I'm working through like a very specific thing that I'm now focused on. Like, it's not always just like, oh, I'm depressed. It's like, oh, hey, I'm having an issue with this particular thing.
Yeah.
Like, you can do therapy for anything. Like there's particular sports therapists that work with athletes because our situations are very, very specific. Like my situation as an athlete is going to be very different to your situation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And therapists are like lawyers. Like, some lawyers are good at contracts. Some lawyers are good at medical malpractice lawsuits. Like, there's different kinds of study under all of it. So it's not just like a one and done black and white thing. So this is all to say, like, I'm a big, big fan of like therapy.
Yeah.
You're absolutely not crazy if you go to therapy. I highly recommend it for everybody. There's a ton of like online options and phone options nowadays. And
so much accessibility now. Yeah. I love your outlook on it too. I think especially someone in your position that's great to hear, to have that type of outlook, being open about it and encouraging people to just be like, listen, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you can actually reach out and talk. The wrestling business too, I feel like, has come a long way in itself in kind of advocating for it, supporting it in some way. Are there any kind of support systems kind of like within AEW that they have in place to make sure their talent and their workers are kind of all all hanging in there, all doing well. Something along those lines. Are you guys,
A lot of it is.
You all right?
You guys all right? I think a lot of it is just like being able to openly talk about it and know that like it's a thing. And like I openly talk to, you know, the medical team at work about my individual issues and, you know, things that may arise that are personal to me. Like there's a lot of, you can't talk about everything because HIPAA is a thing.
Sure.
But I feel totally comfortable talking about my mental illness online, which my company knows I do. I feel comfortable talking about my mental illness with my coworkers, with my managers, with the legal team, with the medical team. And the fact that I feel comfortable enough listing off all of those things and telling you on a podcast,
that's huge,
shows how supportive AEW is for mental health.
That's absolutely huge. How critical are you directly of your own work?
I'll tell you a fun story. Early on when Men of the Year was like a tag team, like Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page, they had a dark match against Sonny Kiss and Joey Janela. And it was Jacksonville. It was probably like late at night. I was tired. Whatever. There's really no excuse. Sorry. but we got to the back and they're like, "Hey, that was great." And I'm like, "I was the shit."
Oh no.
And they're like, "What?" I'm like, "I did this. I did this. I did this." And I started listing off all of the things that I did wrong. And they're like, "Oh yeah, you did do that." I'm like, "Right. I'm really good at covering my ass." But, I would say I'm really critical of my work just because I know that it's very visible. And kind of going back to being a woman with a platform, like there's very few female referees at this level.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a bit of a microscope. So I'm also just extremely competitive, if you can't tell. And I want to be very, very good. And I want people to be very proud of the work that I do. I want people to, who are my coworkers, to be proud of the work I'm doing. I want my managers to be proud of the work I'm doing. I want fans to be proud to support me, kind of a thing, right? But yeah, I'm critical of my work. I'm less critical about the things that don't matter so much anymore. So there's like, oh, this could have gone a little bit differently. It's like anything could have gone a little bit differently.
Yeah, of course.
But it's recognizing things go well and learning from mistakes when they happen.
You mentioned being able to kind of like share that stuff with your coworkers and stuff. Who are some of the better friends that you've made in the business so far? Like who have you maybe gotten close to that you either didn't expect to, or, you know, the ones that you can kind of share those things with?
I don't want to completely answer this question because it will 100% break kayfabe.
But
I've been hanging out a lot with the vlog crew recently. Just the Sammy and Fuego and Ellen Angels and Griff. I'll put it out there. Like Sammy Guevara is a very inspiring guy. And his whole mantra of, you know, if you believe in yourself and you do the work, you can do anything, kind of a thing. And surrounding yourself with people like that, I think is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of going back to the mental health thing. It's like, yeah, sometimes things are really hard, but that's kind of the whole reason why we, you know, work through things. But yeah, I find that by being a referee, it means that you get to work with a lot of different people. So I have a lot of different relationships with a lot of different people, up and down the roster, both men's and women's divisions. Hell, even in the production staff, like there's people in the truck that I text with regularly because of just who you end up working with. So I've got a lot of friends there.
That's good.
Let's just say that.
That's awesome to hear. Before I start to wrap this up and finally get ready to let you go, as I know you're a very, very busy person, what are some of Brittany's personal goals? We know Aubrey. We know Aubrey the ref can be found Wednesdays and Fridays on TNT, Dynamite, Rampage. What outside of that, what are some of the things that you're working on or that you're working towards?
I like would love to hear about the shoot that. Name. That was awesome. That's how close we are.
Yeah. And I'm genuinely interested in that question and your personal goals, the things that you're working on, working towards, you know, in your life.
Honestly, like it's very cliche, But the biggest thing that I'm trying to actively work on right now is my marriage. Mm. I have an extremely supportive husband, mm-hmm. and it's great because he's actually like sitting around the corner, like working right now. it's the kind of relationship where we see very eye to eye on mm-hmm. everything, and we're both very go with the flow. So if like, hey, this didn't work out, cool, great. And we're just immediately like on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Which is really convenient, but he's the kind of guy that when I get an email from a wrestling company saying, hey, we want you to be a full-time referee, and I am now leaving a career that has been established that we have our entire lives built around. Mm. And I just say, hey, I'm doing this. And there's no discussion. It's just a, yeah, okay, yeah, let's do this. Like, to find a partner that does that kind of thing is very unique and valuable. And traveling every week and being on the road and, like, my requirements for work are different. As you said, like, I'm a full-time referee, but I'm still making video games. I'm hosting a podcast. Like, I'm still very busy. And relationships take time and attention and to thrive and whatnot. So it's I just want to make sure that I don't take him for granted.
Mm.
Because part of why I'm so successful is because when I reach a point at the end of the day where I am so tired and stressed out and I'm crying, he's the one that tells me, what flavor of ice cream do you want me to pick up at the store?
That's great to have a support system like that, especially somebody in your position. It's that's a beautiful thing. As a fan of you, as a fan of Aubrey, I wish you nothing but the best. As a friend of Brittany, I'm happy to see you do what you do every single week. Wednesdays, Fridays, Dynamite and Rampage on TNT. I greatly appreciate you being here. Like I said, you were on that short list, so I appreciate you being on one of the first couple episodes. If you guys are into the game stuff, head on over to the AEW Games YouTube channel. Also, check that out once again, the AEW Unrestricted podcast, which she also hosts. You do a lot. Anything else you want to plug before we get out of here?
Oh, boy. I have an action figure coming out this year.
Oh, that's awesome. That's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, Ringside Collectibles. So that's wild. I've seen it. It looks exactly like me. That's like both terrifying and awesome.
That's amazing. All right. Also, go buy her action figure as well.
Yay. Pick it up in stores.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Aubrey. I appreciate you. And we'll catch you on
the next one. I appreciate you. And I love you very much, Chris.
Love you. Thank you so much.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.